2009 meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission to order. And we will start with roll call. My name is Alex Gall, chair of the Historic Preservation Commission. We'll go around to my left and then get up the people in back.
Sean Denniston, member of the commission.
Mark Person, City of Vancouver.
Jan Bader, City of Vancouver.
Jackie Camp, Clark County.
Shri Thirunagari, City of Vancouver, building official.
Jason North, City of Vancouver, development review manager.
Julie Bond, Historic Preservation Commissioner.
Andy Gregg, commission member.
Michelle Kapitanovich, commission member.
Aaron Wagner from Marathon Development.
Annie Weisnecker, Marathon Development.
Mike Williams, the Historic Trust.
Ellie Chamberlain, Historic Trust.
All right, thank you. And we got late word that Rock Manley will be joining us later in the meeting. So to begin tonight's meeting, we will review last month's meeting minutes, and I'll give the commissioners a few minutes to review those minutes.
I wasn't here for the whole meeting, but the part that I was here for, the minutes looked good.
Do any commissioners have any changes to the meeting minutes that they would like to see? No. I made a few typographical corrections, and I can just give them to
Sounds
you.
Good.
I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
I move that we approve the minutes with Alex's edits.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All righty. So our first order of business is Vancouver Heritage Overlay, the Academy Building. This is an informational discussion on the condition of the laundry and boiler buildings and the smokestack at the Academy. Mark?
Actually gonna let Shri and Jason kick this one off.
Yeah. So, good evening, commissioners. As I said earlier, I'm Jason Nortz, Development Review Division Manager for the City of Vancouver.
How do you spell your last name?
N-O-R-T-Z.
Oh, thanks.
And Shri is our Chief Building Official. So, we're here tonight to just provide you with more of an informational update on where we're at with on the condition of the stack, the boiler, and the laundry buildings, and to provide you with more of what our plan is moving forward and how to address some of the issues that have been provided to us from the information that the Trust has submitted to date. So just some background. We've been meeting with the Trust and the developer, because as you know, there was a development application that was recently approved on the Academy site almost a year ago. So we've been meeting with them for probably over a year now, going all the way back to May of 18 to discuss the current condition of the structures. We didn't have formal information to basically tell us what condition those structures were in. So we were working with the Trust and basically had asked them that they provide us with some structural engineering reports so that that could help inform our decision in terms of what we need to do to move forward in terms of next steps, if we're going to retrofit it, to what degree, or if the reports end up telling us that they're so unsafe that we actually have to demo them in the interest of public safety. So in July of 19, we received three separate reports from the Trust, engineering reports, that addressed the condition of those three buildings. We reviewed those reports in-house with Shri and his staff, our structural engineer on staff, as well as we have a third-party consulting engineer that reviewed those reports. And we basically, we were informed by those reports in terms of what our next steps were going to be of the Trust. So some outcomes were essentially of that all three buildings showed severe signs of structural deterioration. I don't think that's necessarily a surprise to anybody here. They've been around a long time, and if you've walked by and see the, and viewed them, they're definitely showing signs of wear and tear. The boiler building also no longer serving as a buttress for the smokestack. I think there was some assumption that for a long time that had done that. Those reports indicated that it was no longer providing or serving as a buttress for the smokestack. And it also informed us that the smokestack is, in fact, highly susceptible to collapse during a moderate seismic event. So with that, and after analysis by Sri and his team and our consulting engineer, we determined that there's no immediate threat that's posed by the current condition of these buildings, but it's in such a deteriorating state that we've ultimately decided that we need to take action. So we've been working with the trust, and we've basically put a plan in place for them to report back to us by March of 2020 with a plan to either retrofit or whatever needs to be done to address the current conditions of those buildings. So when we receive that plan, at that point in time, we would come back to you all, depending on what they're proposing and what action is going to be needed from you all in terms of either advisory or a recommendation. So we don't know that yet, but we just kind of wanted to get ahead of it and let you know that, yes, we are looking at these structures. We're aware of what the conditions are now. The fact that we have a development application that's been approved, I think, you know, it's important that we get ahead of this rather than just, you know, let it sit there. And I know it's been talked about in the media a bunch as well. So we're just trying to be proactive in our approach and wanted to give you more of an update tonight. And if you have any questions in terms of what the next steps look like or some maybe specific questions about the analysis of the structural report, Sri can certainly address that. But otherwise, that's essentially the nuts and bolts of it.
One question I have is the development application, is that the one you're referring to is the Marathon development
correct
application? Okay, it's not one that's at the location of those structures.
Yes, just the previous one that you all saw
right
probably a year ago.
Yep, okay. The commissioners have any questions? Or
where is the project, the Aegis project in SEPA, the SEPA process? Because it's triggered it, I believe, right?
I don't know.
No, it's in the qualified planned action area, so
yeah.
No SEPA was involved.
And all the land use entitlements have already been approved for that project. So we're just, we're pending submittal of building permits at this point, which we have no indication of when that might be. So
mm-hmm.
It's up to the developer.
Well, the developers, do we know when construction you expect to begin?
Not construction, but we're going to submit for building permits in October.
This October?
Yeah.
And do you have an idea of when site prep might start?
Somewhat depends on how quickly the relation permits. But realistically, first, second quarter next year, probably.
So the reason that I ask is I'm curious, since I thought the SEPA would have been triggered on this, and there's one issue that would have been caught by that, which is the impact of these structures of heavy machinery on site.
Mm-hmm.
Has that evaluated, has that factored into any of this?
We just not formally, informally, we've talked about
mm-hmm.
what impact that could possibly have on the site. I think with the current development, phase one as they're calling it, we feel that it's far enough away that if we put certain measures in place, I don't feel like that would be posing any immediate risk. I think with future development of the site, absolutely. So that's why we're trying to get ahead of it.
And those structural reports, is that something that we can review?
Yeah, so we just couldn't get it all together for the packet in time. We
okay.
have all that information. We're happy to provide you with all of that, as well as the letter that we have sent to the trust detailing what our expectations are of them. We'd be happy to send that to you. I guess we can get it to Jackie, and she can get it to you all as soon as tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has there been any discussion about a broader management plan at all for the campus, the larger campus? I think one of the issues that came up during last year's presentation was the concern that development around the academy is just going to start occurring piecemeal by piecemeal, and that there's no 20,000 foot look at it as a whole,
right?
In terms of charting a path forward and protecting what's there, and so I'm just curious if there's been any discussion of.
We are in the process, I believe, in the coming year to update our whole downtown plan, which would incorporate that area as well. Mm-hmm. So that would certainly be addressed as more of a master plan that you're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
But I know a lot of that area immediately around there is currently being redeveloped, definitely to the north.
So the question that I have, so they come back in March 2020 talking about how they're going to address the conditions or what they want to do. I guess I just wonder, you know, that smokestack is so iconic that's there. So how does the public process factor into that based on what, if they come up with a proposal, then how does the public process, how does the public find out about what they want to do? Is it just a matter of like the news reporters getting a hold of it or...
I think, yeah, there's many factors. We can be proactive in terms of what we do. I know when with the initial phase one development, the developer and the trust were very proactive in terms of the outreach that they had done with the community. They did numerous workshops just to get the word out. So, I mean, with any type of public meeting, which their next steps would likely require, that would be noticed. So obviously the public would be notified that way. We can certainly be more proactive in our noticing if you know, that's the decision that policymakers would like us to do, we could certainly do that.
Okay.
Are there any stabilization measures in place right now for any of those three structures?
Not that I'm aware of.
No. That's one of the things that I've noticed is going by is that the rate of deterioration is increasing,
mm-hmm.
because there hasn't been any stabilization done in the last few years. And so I think that's one of the things that I would be looking for in March is, I think, a pretty definite stabilization regime if there is a do nothing at this time, which is reasonable. I mean, it's reasonable to say we need to take time to do something else. But in the meantime, I think the acceleration of the deterioration is concerning, and those structures will need stabilization or else we'll be looking at a classic case of demolition by neglect.
All right. Rock Manley just joined the meeting. Just to get you up to speed, Rock, we're getting a presentation on the Academy building and the three buildings in the northeast, the smokestack, the laundry, and the boiler buildings. And there's been several engineering reports done about viability of those structures and... It looks like, sounds a little bit like you're waiting until March 2020 to get a more definitive report, or?
No, I think we have the information we need to make informed decisions, and we're working with the trust to come forward with a plan based on the outcomes of those reports as far as what they need to do moving forward.
All right. And do you have any concerns or any questions about...
It's specifically the laundry, the boiler.
Right, right.
Remember, we toured them last year.
Yeah, and I'm familiar with the buildings from looking at them prior to the tour, and the smokestack is an iconic structure in Vancouver. So I guess, I understand, as I heard Sean say when I came in, it seems to be there have been years of neglect, and the buildings are in pretty rough condition. I'd really be curious to see what direction an assessment is headed and what direction the trust is.
And the city will provide us with the engineering reports after the meeting, so we can have a chance to look them over.
That's how much of a geek I am. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We'll see you again in early 2020. So.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear from the trust?
I mean, does the trust have anything to add at this
at this time?
Not really. I mean, we know we have the date, we have to come forward with that. Mm-hmm. I would know it's always been our hope that we can save the structure on the property, but it just has to make sense. Economically, to do sense.
Okay. Well, moving right along to new business. Sharon is not with us this evening. So I don't know, Jackie, are you taking? Okay, so we will discuss the Historic Promotion Grant Subcommittee. It needs to be formed. The grants are due September 13th, and we will need a subcommittee to review those applications and select the recipients. Anybody expressed interest in being on that subcommittee? We need three.
We
correct?
Need three, correct.
I can do it.
Michelle?
I'm interested as well.
Julie?
That's it. I've done it the last couple of years, I think, and it is real fun and rewarding to see what submittals come in, come across the desk. But I should probably step back this time.
I can't, since I'm on the board of one of the frequent recipients. So I can't be part of that. Just won't keep things fair.
When will it meet?
It would be soon after the 13th deadline. Oh,
probably so mid to late September.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll check your calendar.
If it's in September, I can do it.
Okay, all right. Yes, usually it takes, you all didn't do it more than once, did you? Or did you have to last time?
We only met once.
Once. I mean, I went to the library and did my whole
right.
temple, you know, the ranking of them, and then we just met once.
Okay. Yeah.
Do we have any applicants?
We have, I think I feel like one has come in.
I bet Shalashi Prairie Railroad.
No, we should get four from now.
Yeah.
Typically, we get more requests than we have money to give out.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So it's parsing out who gets what.
We're doing one. Park Service is doing at least one.
Oh, yeah.
Trust is doing one.
Library is doing at least one.
So, yeah, they'll
Fort Vancouver Library.
No, I'm sorry. I will always think of the museum as the Carnegie Library, no matter what. I can't think of it as anything else. But, yes, the museum will be doing at least one, and I think maybe partnering on one or two others.
Jackie, I can volunteer.
Okay, thanks, Ed.
Okay, so we have Julie, Andy, and Michelle.
And I believe we're having Pat, who's our resident participant on this committee, also help us.
That'll be fun.
I will get in touch with the three of you, and we'll get something scheduled.
I did have a question about the grants, because, you know, we hear about it at the beginning, and then when they're granted. What kind of follow-up do we do on the projects for kind of verification about how did you use the money? Did you do it? Did you use it how you said you would?
Like an evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I do remember us requesting that of several of the recipients last year. I'm curious if there was any follow-up.
Well, they're still in process, some of them. So how this grant works, they can, you know, wait until November. They have to request their funds before the end of the year. So sometimes we won't, but we do require a grant report. So when they do request their money, they have, I think, 90 days. So they kind of have to fiddle with their calendar. It has to still be within the calendar year. But if they request it early, they have 90 days to submit their final documentation, which shows how they spent the money, receipts, and then a description and whatever else that they can provide that shows how it worked. So we always have those on file and are happy to share that with the commission.
Yeah, can we see? I'd be interested in seeing the form. I'm not concerned about any particular project. I'm curious about the process.
I'll send it out to you all tomorrow.
Thank you.
Yeah. I filled out lots of those.
Yes. Great. Okay, old business and updates. Demolition subcommittee. The subcommittee, Sean, Don, and I met on Friday and had what I thought was a really productive meeting. reviewing the AECOM report, taking into consideration people's comments, and Sean took a lot of great notes, and because of that, he was the lucky guy to write them up. And so you have in front of you sort of a summation of our ideas and a path forward to address this situation that we have in the county. The long and short of it is it seems like SEPA is really the hook on which to hang this hat. And
although now I have doubts.
I know. You know, if you read the county's code on SEPA and county decisions, it plainly states that cultural resources and historic properties are part of the consideration. But then it goes on to basically discuss archaeology and the process for reviewing archaeology with no mention of the built environment. And so part of it would be updating the code to basically address the other side of that historic preservation coin, which is the built environment. And then we sort of streamlined the flow chart, and maybe I'll let Sean, you want to just walk through it? And I, at the end of this, what we're hoping is that you guys can have some comments on this by next meeting.
And you know, I think one of our thoughts here is as much as possible to leverage stuff that already exists and not reinvent the wheel unless we really needed a new wheel. And so our flow chart kind of it starts with what we already do, which is the highest level of protection. So anything that's on the Heritage Register is already reviewed by us. And so that stays in place. Just if it's on the register, then it goes through the standard process that we've already recently revised to be, you know, clearer. If it's not, then that next level, which is already in the code, which is if it's on any of the other registers, so there's the National Register of Historic Places, the Washington Register of Historic Places, the Washington Historic Barn Register. So if it's on any of those registers or on any cultural resources inventory, so there's a state one, but there's also our Clark County cultural resources inventory. So if it's on any of those, it's supposed to go through the SEPA review. Our recommendation is clarify the SEPA process for what is actually going to happen with those, especially calling out what mitigation steps might be required. And one of the bigger ones is documentation, recognizing that some resources are going to be lost. We want to make sure we document them. But other mitigations, whether that's, you know, plaquing to recognize what was there, salvage of materials, or maybe even saving the property through moving or saving it in place. But really clarifying that in the county process for the SEPA review as to what happens. And then the other part of that is making sure that our cultural resources inventory gets updated regularly. So right now it's, how old is it? 14 years old?
99.
So 20 years old.
Sure. Yeah, and that is, I mean, that is a cornerstone of the purpose of a CLG. Is to regularly inventory your historic properties. So, I mean, there's, I think, enough justification just so, there.
Yeah, so our recommendation is that we change either the rules and procedures or the ordinance itself to say that that inventory shall be updated no less than every 5 years so that we are, you know, bringing on the new properties. And also to clarify that buildings that are over 50 years, which is kind of the standard now, shall be evaluated for inclusion on the inventory, but that buildings younger than 50 years can be included on the inventory because sometimes you have significant buildings that are younger, and you know that before 50 years comes along, and we don't want to cut those out. And then the last recommendation that we have for the inventory is that this body can put a building on the inventory at any time by majority vote, that we believe that it meets the criteria for being on the inventory. And, you know, just in case anything slips through the cracks, you know, if we are updating on a 5-year process. So that's kind of the enhanced SEPA or updated SEPA, which is, we thought, was the right mechanism to do a lot of that, those steps that we've kind of talked about and are included in the AECOM report. If it's not on one of those registers or inventories, we recognized kind of the last One of the last fundamental issues is just that we're losing the buildings without documentation and without the public having an opportunity to say anything. And so we're recommending that for all buildings over 50 years old, there is a demolition delay of 45 days. We've seen longer ones nearby. Demolition delays are not unusual, during which time advocates would have the opportunity to advocate. And then a hearing before the commission where the project would be heard and the public would have an opportunity to comment. So there'd be the opportunity to preserve, but this piece would not actually prevent demolition. This idea that it's just creating the room for advocacy. And then the last step is that we have a minimal level of documentation for all demolitions, realizing that it kind of doesn't matter how old they are. We talked about a very modest level of documentation, which is just pictures of all the elevations to be submitted with the demolition permit application. That is such a low ask of buildings that we didn't see a reason to key it to any specific age. And just say, you just include that with your application. That's, you got the address and you've got the elevation pictures, and if you submit all the right information, then you get your demolition permit.
And that those photos would then be archived through the Clark County GIS.
With all of our whatever existing information we have in the Clark County system about those buildings, archived and made publicly available, which the Clark County staff, the GIS staff has alluded to, at least, is possible. So that's the flow that we see, and each one of these things kind of can work independently. We think that if the SEPA process, if leveraging the SEPA process doesn't work, then we need to reconsider it, because we see that as a fairly important way to handle some of these non-listed but still potentially significant buildings to have that evaluation. And there's more details in kind of our, I wouldn't call this a report, call it something. Description. But that's the basic flow as we see it from that we would recommend to the larger commission to think about.
Thank you.
Alex, is there anything you wanted to salient points?
No, I mean, I was looking over the flow. I mean, it's not really a flow chart. It's not, necessarily one going into the other. So, if somebody has other ideas about it, pass your comments along. And
so we'll talk about it at the next meeting. And
yeah,
I
would like to. Yeah, okay. I'd like to finally sort of move on. Have a concrete set of recommendations and move on to the next steps of implementation or whatever it looks like.
That's good.
Is this?
After Rock's comment, we'll open it up for, looks like we have a public comment.
Yeah, go ahead. I guess I have a question for staff and for the committee. Is this type of a process, because a hearing is being recommended, is this something the city attorney should review as far as, how far, what our authority is, how far we can go, how far we should or should not go?
Yes. I told Alex when he arrived, I had looked at it, but I hadn't quite had a chance to really get into it. And some things I flagged, I was like, okay, I need to find out more about. So I told Alex that between now and then, I'm going to kind of ask those questions of my director, Oliver, and see if there's anything I need to direct to Chris or the PA on, do we have any barrier, things that we need to keep in versus something in state law or something that she would say would be a conflict for some reason for the county. So I hope to have all those answers for us at the October meeting.
And I would like to just, know that this is a draft, and it should be dated so that we know when this draft dates to, I think it will change, but it's the first.
And that was my question. My comment would be, thank you guys for the good work, and it's something we need to wrestle this thing to the ground in some manner, then this is a good start.
And I think the last thing that I would say is when we talk about each of these steps, we identified what we thought the regulatory impact would be, recognizing that some of these would certainly require a change to our county regulations. And recognizing that that's something very different than just, you know, changing our own rules and procedures or something like that. I had kind of hoped that we would see those kinds of details from the AECOM report, but if we can get it from the county attorney, then that's great. Then we've got it.
Yeah, and so yeah, hopefully I'll be able to bring that. And the other thing I wanted to bring up for us to consider when we're talking about this is kind of budgetary stuff as well. So if we're putting in, we should or shall update the inventory every 5 years, it depends on how you go about it, right? So, like, I mean, the city has done some in previous years where it takes, you know, it's more than just volunteers or staff involved or a grant or some kind of funding. So we have to keep that in mind, like how are we going to hold ourselves to be able to do it, and how do we, it's big, so kind of thinking of that way.
Yeah, and there are different levels of inventory, right? I mean, there are reconnaissance levels where you can literally do it from an office if you have access to the GIS database.
Okay.
I mean, anything over 50 years old could be placed on the inventory as just a historic property, lowercase h, lowercase p kind of thing. So, I mean, it wouldn't necessarily have to be people boots on the ground kind of inventory, but, you know, I think certainly that's the preferred method, but I recognize that there's an expense associated with that.
Yeah.
But I do think for the, you know, I mean, 20 years without updating it, I think it's time.
Sure.
Holly?
Yes, I'm Holly Chamberlain, speaking as a private citizen, so to speak, changing hats. Just want to bring up the idea of all of the documentation forms that are in Wizard. I've mentioned this before. And are they or are they not on the Clark County inventory? They're inventory forms, but there hasn't been a procedure for officially adopting them necessarily unless you all decide that you're going to do that. Of course, as with such things, there are a variety of levels of quality of them, but there are literally hundreds, maybe a thousands, that have been done since the year 2000 when the countywide survey was done. So there's quite a body of information within there, some of which is pretty high quality, and you might just want to consider whether you're going to take that into the thinking for this part of the project, or you're going to not just say they're not part of the inventory because they weren't officially done by the county or whatever. But there's a lot of good information in there. Obviously, some of them will have been demolished, but it's just something to kind of keep in mind as you proceed through this.
Well, that's been my avenue this whole time, was hoping that we could somehow incorporate the statewide historic property inventory database into our demolition review process. Mm-hmm. But it seems as though it's just getting that information. You know, one of the earlier iterations of how to document and preserve or whatever was, can we just take the information that's already on the Clark County GIS and just get it onto the HPI? But they're, you know, different agencies, different, so we ran into a problem with that. And, you know, the flip side is that we have this Clark County Heritage Inventory. I've been working in this county for 20 years. I've never laid eyes on this supposed inventory. I don't know who has access to it.
I have a copy.
You have a copy. In what form?
It's paper.
It's paper.
It's
it is not accessible to the public.
I mean, it may be in words, but
is not in practice.
Yeah.
You know, as somebody who...
I don't know where those records
are in our office. Yeah. But then the city has their paper. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, as we go along, there's some that are digitized. But what I found is that, because there was a database that DAP helped create to input them. Mm-hmm. But some of them don't have all of the information that's on the paper record I found. So as we go along, like I'll get a inquiry about a property and I'll find out that it's on the inventory and I'll go dig. I mean, it's like a process. I have to like, go through a spreadsheet and find the numbers and like go into the file cabinet and find it. And I've been like, when I do that, I scan them in and I'm starting to get this database.
But I think that's a symptom of the age and
but we need to, get that.
Obsolescence of this inventory.
We need to get
so
that in,
I don't know
in
how
digital
much,
format.
You know, again, I would feel more comfortable if we were discussing the statewide HPI because I know that that is publicly accessible. Yeah. I know, as Holly said, you may have pretty wide gap in quality of what's on there, but for the most part, it gives you the photos, it gives you the documentation, at least, if not the history or whatever. Yeah. But the documentation is there. And, you know, for instance, the state undertook a statewide inventory in 2011 and had a consultant just go through assessor's records. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think they probably left their office to go do that, you know. Mm-hmm. But they put thousands of properties mm-hmm. on the Washington HPI. It's problematic, you know, because all it is a build date and, you know, it just says this is assessor's data. Thankfully, DAP has separated those properties out from the ones that have actually been placed individually or by people with boots on the ground because it used to just muddy the waters. If you were looking for a project area and you got 200 hits and you're just like, oh, no, but half, you know, more than half of them are just these quick assessor-derived HPIs. So, I mean, I would love it if we could somehow leverage the demo review and result by getting things on the statewide HPI. But, you know, we had this discussion early on, and it just seemed like a kind of a non-starter with DAP in terms of getting the data that's existing up there for documentation.
I do know that in the early days of Wizard, DAP did sort of a general call out for getting data from all the different surveys around the state. So the survey forms from 1999 and 2000 are in Wizard. You just, it's in the you know, where it's like documentation, you click on that, mm-hmm. and you can get an image of the often handwritten inventory forms. So where the whole report is, I don't know whether they kept that or not mm-hmm. in, you know, they have this research resources, but I don't know whether it's in there or not.
Right.
But the actual forms are there. And so, you know, it's the usual search in Wizard. You can look it up by address. And, you know, sometimes there are multiple inventory forms because things have been done over time. But anyway, it's just, it's, there is still, there's a lot of information on Clark County in Wizard that's not been really considered part of the inventory. So just throwing that out to see if there's a way that might be incorporated.
And I think as the subcommittee was talking about this, I was really, at least I mm-hmm. saw our recommendation as more of a framework. It was very easy to get lost in the details of how you make mm-hmm. all this work. But if we can agree on a framework, mm-hmm. then maybe we'll get a list, mm-hmm. little less lost in those details mm-hmm. as we try to make it happen. And mm-hmm. I think that leveraging what we already have is mm-hmm. is paramount. And if there is a way to make what's in Wizard serve our needs for, you know, our own inventory. You know, if it could just be, well, yeah, we've got an inventory. Everything's in Wizard because that's just how we did it. We mm-hmm. loaded everything in there.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's a viable path forward. But the key is that we have an inventory that is updated. Not so much that we have an inventory in this format. You know, mm-hmm. that uses this way to exist. I think that mm-hmm. we don't get into those specifics. Mm-hmm. We get into the larger specifics of. We need an inventory that's up to date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, part of it is you don't want to be reacting always when mm-hmm. a demolition permit comes in. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be nice to get ahead of the curve, you know, and have mm-hmm. an updated mm-hmm. inventory that is accessible. Mm-hmm. I mean, for instance, you know, if somebody buys a property, you know, wouldn't it be good for them to know that their property is on the Clark County Heritage Inventory? I mean, is that even something mm-hmm. that's available to a potential mm-hmm. buyer of a property, unless they really, unless they specifically think to ask.
You'd have to really look at. You'd have to look it up in Wizard, and you'd have to know.
You'd have
to
know.
Yeah,
and we have them flagged in the Property Information mm-hmm. Center. So mm-hmm. if people were looking at that, it's flash, so it's on the inventory, but it's, you know, on a tab that I don't know if everyone so goes.
All of our potentially significant buildings that are more than 70 years old, since it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But just, for example, everything that was inventoried for the Columbia River crossing, you know, that a lot of those buildings are probably gone because a lot of them were downtown, and I know in my neighborhood, there's, which I live just north of downtown, there's 10 new apartment buildings, give or take, that are going in. And usually it's two bungalows are taken out and a new apartment building goes in. So I know that some of those are gone, but they were inventoried, and but they're not officially maybe part of the inventory, just depending on what y'all decide. So just something to think about.
Thanks.
And I've done some research on this. King County, I noticed, has a, on their historic pages, their web pages, they have their inventory, like a searchable database from there. And I queried our web team to see if that was something we could create and do. So we're starting to talk about it, but I guess, it, you know, we'll have to decide what we want to do, what focus. Is that what we want to do, or do we want to get everything on Wizard, or, you know, what would work best? But they, you know, you can put in an address and the form pops up and it's searchable and it's pretty easy to use from what I saw. And that could be an option, and we could get at least all that we have in there and then keep adding to it. So just a thought.
Yeah. Any other questions, comments?
Yeah, I think that if there are any questions of me and Alex as the representatives of the subcommittee before you start doing your review, anything you've got so far.
Can I just ask a clarifying question about the flowchart? Because I thought I was reading it right, and then someone made a comment and made me realize I wasn't. Because I actually really like the look of it. I think it's very nice and clean. But at first I thought that that was the first question you were asking, and if the answer was no, you go to the second question. But what I'm understanding instead is that that first current process is going to be replaced by the updated current process. I'm not sure. Do you know what I mean?
So that first step is, you know, is the building on the Clark County Heritage Register? Yes, then we actually have our process. No, conceivably, it should be going through the CEQA process right now.
Okay, then it goes to the next. Okay.
And then we're talking about updating kind of from there on, you know, combination of updating and new stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so I was reading it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It is flowing.
Yeah, I think I know what you're... Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, demolitions. Next order of business is rules and procedures update review. The next section being the National Register of Historic Places and the Commission's review in that process. Jackie.
Yes, hi. Okay, so for our newer members, we started kind of by section updating the Commission's rules and procedures. Especially since after last year's update of our code, we wanted to go back and make sure everything was consistent and make sure everything makes sense and flows with how we had changed the code. So we've been kind of putting things, sections on the agenda when you all don't have a ton of like cases where it's going to be a long evening. So the last one we did, I think, was in March or April. So far we've done the kind of the intro and bylaws. And so in your binder here, you'll see the versions that were updated per those meetings. So I'm trying to keep track of it and keep like a footer that shows like what, you know, date this was revised. So, and then some highlights that you'll see are things that we just need to come back at once we get there to verify and update depending on kind of the question that's in there. So we've done the bylaws, we've done looking at a new nomination form and the procedures for the putting your property on the Clark County Heritage Register. And I realized that my next section was supposed to be the application standards, and I forgot. So next time, and I jumped to the National Register. So next one you will get is the application standards, just a guideline for property owners on how to fill out their forms and little tips that they can use to find the information and things like that. So I think that's going to be an important part. So we'll get to that next. But for this month, we provided the updated version for the review of National Register. of historic places for your all's review. So I went and I looked at what DAP has on their website and the kind of guidelines that they provide to property owners, as well as verbiage that talks about what CLGs are required to do, and put that into here in updating the text that was already here. So as well, so I took the DAP information that they have online, as well as trying to reflect what we changed in our Clark County code and how we did the Clark County Heritage Register rules and procedures, so they kind of mirrored the same processes that you would do. So let's see what else. So basically, I kind of shortened the beginning, kind of made it more succinct about what's required. For basically when we receive notice from the state that there's a National Register nomination in Clark County, I think they have 60 days before their meeting to get that to us, we would schedule a public hearing, kind of similar to what we would do for the other CCHR properties, prepare a staff report. You all would review it, go visit if you could, and then we would have the hearing, and putting in kind of just our current process for hearings to match how we do the other Clark County Heritage Register process. I put in a link to the National Register Bulletin that seemed to me very helpful on explaining what you should be evaluating and information that the commission or the advisory council for the state should be looking at when they're reviewing a National Register nomination. The things that you have to kind of consider are the same as it was before, and is how it is for all CLGs and for the state. And then we added things like make sure we bring the form that the chair signs so that we can get this out back to DAP ASAP. So you'll see kind of things like that. I added a, once you all make a decision and it goes to DAP, they have that advisory council meeting where they make a decision on it and they send it to the National Park Service for the keeper to make the final determination. And if it is put on the register, then we receive a letter that's, you know, congratulations, this property is now listed on the National Register. So I put in there a kind of a tickler that once we receive that, staff's got some steps they need to do, as putting it on the, you know, permit database, notifying the cities and stuff like that, so that it's flagged just like our other properties. Then the last part is kind of related information. And this is what similar to what we had in the current rules and procedures. And I went back, and because I have Sean's and Andy's first review, because they kind of did an initial review of all these rules and procedures and provide a comment. And Sean, I think you had a question as to, do we need to have this in here or not? So that's a question I don't know if it's helpful or not. It's right out of the federal code, mm-hmm. on kind of what the criteria is, and also just a link for people to go to the state when they need information about nominating their property, because it's their process. So that's that. And then the last one I just provided, this is the form that we do fill out and send back. That's it.
Are we to comment?
I'm happy to take comments now, or if you still need some review time, I'm happy to get them by email, whatever works.
Well, so on the second page under two, and it outlines the commission's responsibilities, I don't really understand A, B, C, and E. And I feel as though they need some context and definition. In my
two, A, B, A, what are those?
Yeah. It determines the category of historic property.
Yeah.
Establishes the context for evaluating the property. Identifies the level of significance. Determines if there are criteria considerations that might make the property eligible. The property is eligible if A, it meets the criteria, and B, it has integrity, which are F and D. And that's it. I mean, I don't really understand what these other steps
yeah,
are.
That was in the original ones. I'm like, I had the same. What does that mean?
It smacks of something that was brought in from some other that nobody's questioned at any point along the way.
The link to that bulletin, it goes through each of those, and I guess that's what they're using as their review. So that's what
I pull up that bulletin probably. Every week, every other week.
Okay, so
kind of go through.
Because they got headers on all that. So that's why I figured they were in there, because that's how the state is evaluating them.
So I think that I agree with Alex on this, is those seem very odd to me, because a lot of those things are, when it comes right down to it, the application is making the case one way or the other on it. We aren't determining for the building. The applicant is making the case. And it really seems like this whole number two is that, yes, we need to apply the National Register criteria to our evaluation of the application. Do we agree with the application or not? And do we recommend that it be listed or not? And, you know, I think that that's kind of what that needs to talk about, is whether we agree with the case that the application is making. In a lot of ways, it's the process for our own Register. It's here's our application, we evaluate the application, we discuss it, and we decide whether we as a body think that yes, it meets the criteria and it should be listed. I kind of feel like it should be pretty much the same process here. Okay. We review the application, we discuss it, we decide whether we think that the application establishes that it should be listed. I think the one big question that I had is, in this process, has this application already gone through any level of review at DAP?
I think they've intaked it, but you do it your part first.
I mean, that's one of the things that we do in our process, is sometimes an application will come in and we'll just say, you need more. You know, it needs more before we can really consider it. And I would hope that these applications have gotten to that point.
I think staff does a first initial. Okay. If they don't think it's enough, they'll push it back, and then it comes to you. I'll double check.
I think most of what you've laid out here makes sense, except for that number two, and I think that's okay. Where we just really need to be clear about what it is that we're doing.
Okay.
And yeah, I don't think that we are making determinations or establishing or identifying. I think we're really just, does this application support listing or doesn't it?
Can I ask something, though? Because when I look at the evaluation report form, it does correspond to those somewhat. So it does ask, you know, is there a relevant, you know, was there a historical event that occurred here, or was there?
Right, those are the four criteria, which
right.
are totally
so,
embodied.
But don't we, hold on one second, let me finish.
Yeah.
So don't we have to review to answer those questions, whether or not this property meets any of those? Do you know what I mean? So if we eliminate that, then we're no longer.
Well, review, yes. You know, determine, you know, establish.
Okay.
Not,
so we could just say it has these elements as a part of it. We're not determining that. We're just, I mean, what's the
yeah, we're looking at the
that
application.
Important.
So
okay.
somebody has made a recommendation mm-hmm. that this is eligible. Somebody has gone to the effort to nominate it mm-hmm. and fill out a nomination form. It then needs to be formally, you know, a determination of significance. And DAP and CHP will, you know, sign off on that, and then it becomes, gets on the National Register. What we're doing is, like Sean was saying, we're looking at the application.
Okay.
Are there erroneous facts
okay, so
in
more,
there?
So more about
there,
content, and less about.
Yeah, it's not our responsibility to evaluate the actual property. Right? I mean, we're evaluating essentially the application and its mm-hmm. veracity, its, you know.
Okay.
So would you say that the wordsmithing of these items needs to be just to say that we're evaluating the, whether the category applies?
Well, these points to me raise a lot more questions than they answer. What does it mean, level of significance? Well, what is that? What can you tell me what What are the levels of significance?
I just went into the bulletin and I saw Jackie was doing the same thing, and she's right. It's all right out of the bulletin. Aside from specifically what those content items are, if I were the applicant, it would seem that it would be helpful to me to know what the review is going to be. So I could put together, okay, here's what I'm supposed to apply with, and here's how it's being reviewed, and okay, I get it. So I can kind of, I get what you're saying, that, it's kind of...
I guess without definitions and clarification of what, establishes the context for evaluating the property, that's pretty vague. What is... Specifically, does that
I did the same thing, and then I found this, and I was like,
"Oh, look at that document,
supposed to tell us?"
I
always did the sample. Like, this makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
But that's what it all the bulletins have 20 pages long.
I think one thing that we do need to keep in mind is the National Park Service has some great resources, but when it comes down to it, all of the bulletins are inherently limited, and all of them have flaws. And so we shouldn't slavishly keep to this, because the bulletin is not regulation. It's actually not the criteria for being adopted and, being added to the register. It's just a bulletin to give you information. And, some person put it together and it made it through the bureaucratic process.
And then they got fired.
They may have gotten fired. But, there are... So I'll give you my key example of this. So the Secretary of Interior's standards, the standards that are kind of this holy grail of everything, the guy who originally wrote them now says this is not how the standards were meant to be used. The way that all of our, the local governments are using the standards, the way that the federal government is using the standards, the way that everybody's using the standards is exactly not how the standards were meant to be used. It's not the purpose that they were meant to serve. So we should be very careful about what we get from the National Park Service, that we should be careful about slavishly following it, because it's not some paragon of preservation. We have to find a process that works. I think when it comes right down to it, we just need language that we are evaluating the application, establishing, our basis for evaluation, and our recommendation to DAP about whether we think it should be listed or not.
I think that makes so much more sense, and it would could be done in way less words.
Okay.
And
okay.
I don't think. I mean, I feel like this is getting to the point of making a mountain out of a molehill.
That's what I was like. We had it in here, so there was a reason, and so that's why I was like, I first deleted it, and then I was like, what?
The reason is somebody opened this bulletin and pulled all the headings out of it.
Yeah.
And that's not a good reason to keep it in,
or a good way to
do the work we need to do.
Well, what I'll do, I'll go back and kind of reflect how we do our local register criteria and kind of simplify it, and this will be our way we do these reviews, and I'll run it by DAP just in case there's not something that, because we haven't done one of these, I don't know if any of you all have, Andy might have, but I know we haven't done one in a long time. So
2014.
Yeah, so 2014. I'll double check, make sure that they're good with. Because, the form is pretty simple. There's not
much.
Well,
and that was my other comment, is the form also seems like a generic shoehorn example.
Right.
Like, we don't have a landmarks commission. We don't have a
we're not in New York.
Historic review board. It seems, I Googled this form. Mm-hmm. Even the title of it, Certified Local Government National Register Nomination Evaluation Report Form. I think you can do without the word
you
report.
You forget your reading
there.
And so on.
I know. I do a lot of editing in my real life, but I don't know. It just seems like as though I didn't see this form in any other context online in Google other than when this document came up, this larger
document.
It's
on DAP.
Okay.
Admittedly,
I went to DAP, and I looked on guidelines, and I looked on stuff, and I didn't see it, so I was just like, okay.
So I think one thing that should be in our process is whether we recommend that the application needs more information. because unfortunately the nominations are not used the way that they're supposed to be used. They're often used as the, you know, absolute statement of significance. Here is set in stone what is significant about these buildings. And while I think that we should be working to change the fact that nominations are used that way, I think we have to recognize that they are used that way. So if we think that there is important information missing from the application as, you know, supposed local experts on these, that we should have a way to, you know, to say we recommend that.
There is a provision for that on the evaluation report form. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's, let me see how it was worded.
This last one?
Yeah.
Which would like to take following
the commission chooses not to make a recommendation on this nomination for the following reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And insufficient information could be one set.
Yeah, I think that it would fit in there, but I think that we want to be explicit in our process that one of the things that we're evaluating is whether it has sufficient information in the application to represent the significance of the building.
And we might want to make some recommendations as to what we're looking for so it doesn't become a guessing game.
Which is why you were putting those points in the first place, except that they're
hard to grasp. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, mirroring our process for the Clark County Heritage Register, where we have bounced things back and said, you know, we want to see references, or this fact and this, you know, or this thing that you're hanging your hat on for this. Doesn't really wasn't a movement in American history. It may be significant for this reason, but not for the reason you're stating, or whatever. So I think, you know, we don't want to paint ourselves into a corner with the language, but just have a broad. We can ask for more information.
Sure.
You know.
Okay. Put that in.
Yeah.
Streetcar commercial building. Company.
Streetcar commercial.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was where I was going.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that was.
And so
part of great example. I mean, we'll
dime store deco.
Yeah.
So part of this might be that, you know, that we issue findings. You know, as this is our formal opinion on it, even though the DAP process may or may not care about that. But that, you know, when we send this form back to DAP, and I think having a nice straightforward form like this, it makes sense. But that we can staple our findings to it. This is. These are the things, these are the whys for our decision.
So does this go back to DAP or does it go back to the applicant? It
goes back to DAP.
And then DAP would convey that information to the applicant potentially?
It'll become part of the final process of DAP making their final decision about whether it gets added to the register or not.
But it's so, because I was interested in what you said about having a space in here to put in not just check boxes, but actually have kind of a dialogue with the applicant if we're seeing things that are missing, or this application isn't as robust as it should be, and I think you have it, you just need to do these things. And so if we're going to provide feedback like that, then wouldn't we want to kind of cut through some of that red tape of going back and forth? You know, because then if it goes back to DAP and DAP's like, yeah, you're right, we're going to go back to the applicant with a decline, then they have to go back through the application process again.
So the process for how these are supposed to go, since it's a public meeting, the applicant has the opportunity to attend the public hearing, and I think that would be that opportunity to have the direct, because it's only going to be buildings in Clark County, so they're all going to be local.
And they don't typically go directly to the National Register either. Normally a building would go through the local register process, not always, but normally.
I don't know about normally either. It's oftentimes it seems like it goes to the local one if they don't think they can get into the national one. Because the national one is all the recognition with none of the obligations.
Right. That's true.
Or benefits, really. So bragging rights.
Well, it makes you eligible for the federal historic tax credit.
That's true.
Which is maybe not as good as it used to be, but is still something.
Okay.
Good
feedback. Thank you.
I think that you've done a great job of you and Sharon have done a great job of streamlining some of these other sections.
Yeah.
So you know, apply that mojo here.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
It's a theme. Okay. And if anything comes up, just feel, you know, email us. But I will make a new version. And because it's kind of a big, substantial change, I'll bring it back to next month's meeting.
Mm-hmm. The other ones were kind of like little tweaks that we did. So I feel like this one, I just want to make sure I got what you all were thinking and everyone's good with it. Because it might be a while till we see it again. I don't want people to forget.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks for all your work on this again.
Thanks for the feedback.
So we've reached the point in the evening where we invite public comment. I believe we have one member of the public still in attendance. Stalwart member of the public.
Holly Chamberlain, now reporting in from the Washington Trust for Historic Preservation. I wanted to remind everyone that the grant deadline for the Valerie Savinsky grants is October 15th, and those grants are for up to $2,000, primarily for bricks and mortar grants. So I hope that you'll share that with your networks and remind people that those monies are available. The application is really simple, as it would be logical for a small amount of money. But the idea is that hopefully this will provide some seed money for important projects around the state. So keep in mind, if something comes up, then of course let me know if there are any questions I can answer about projects that you have in mind, whether they might qualify or not. Thanks.
Stabilizing the smokestack?
Too bad, go a long way.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to get you very far.
Put a belt around it. I'm curious to see.
I've seen some early work in actually leveraging what we've learned from windmills and the big electric generating windmills as stabilization for old chimneys. And it's really interesting. It's just this idea that you could actually lower a mast down inside a chimney and stabilize it that way. So it'd be really interesting to see.
I guess that's a question for Hollis, who's probably read the reports. Do they make recommendations about what could be done to stabilize the smokestack?
To some degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly about the current condition. Yeah.
That, in fact, is how they stabilized the one at the Sloss Steel Mill in Birmingham, Alabama. That's a big historic site now for a concert venue, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's how they did it, just as you described.
Okay, does anybody have anything else to add?
I have one question.
Yeah.
The binders, last time I brought them, you all wanted me to take them back.
So, we have new members, so it depends on your preference. We can give you.
I think that's a fine idea.
I would prefer that you not lose them rather than
you guys, just, you can leave them at your desk. I'll pick them up.
We're happy to lose them for you.
I do want to say
with
your participation, you have a historic register nomination for the old library building.
Old library.
Brad Richardson's preparing it.
So that should be ready either October. Well, I'm not going to be here for the October meeting. So Mark and I were just talking about whether he's just going to bring it or whether he needs to wait till I can come with it.
Nice.
And then we're going to, Brad's going to start on the register nomination for the Old City Cemetery, which he wants us to rename the Historic City Cemetery instead of the Old City Cemetery.
The one on Grant?
Yeah. The one on, Grant.
Grand and Mill Plain?
Grand and Mill Plain.
Okay. I will entertain a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting.
Second.
And seconded. All in favor of adjourning tonight's meeting?
Aye.
Aye.
Good job, Alex.
Thanks.